You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And Ric Flair returns to the show today to share stories about the late, great, eight-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion and WWE Hall of Famer Harley Race. Harley passed away on August 1st at the age of 76 due to complications from lung cancer, but the memories and tales live on, as you're about to hear from Ric, who's always a great guest. He traveled and wrestled with Harley during Ric's early days in the business. Ric actually says without Harley, there'd be no Ric Flair. And we'll hear what he learned from Harley, some of the things he witnessed while traveling with Harley Race. But before we get into the life and times of the legendary Harley Race, let me share a quick message for all active or retired military members. Were you diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss after using 3M's dual-ended earplugs? Now, these earplugs are yellow and black or yellow and olive. They're often called Christmas lights. And instead of protecting your hearing, they actually permitted damaging sounds to get through. If you're issued these earplugs while in service and then diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss, then please call 1-800-400-9748 because you might qualify for significant cash compensation. Again, if you served in the military, were issued 3M's dual-ended yellow and dark earplugs, and were later diagnosed with hearing loss or tinnitus, then call 1-800-400-9748 right now and see if you qualify for cash compensation. 3M knew of these defects but failed to warn anybody about them. A whistleblower lawsuit that 3M quietly settled made the case that 3M manipulated test results to make it appear as if the plugs met government standards, but they did not. So, once again, if you're in the military anytime from 2003 through 2015 and are now suffering from diagnosed hearing loss or tinnitus, then please call 1-800-400-9748 right now. Now remember, this lawsuit is against 3M and not against the government or the military, so your benefits with the VA will not be affected. Here's the phone number one last time so you can get it. 1-800-400-9748. All right, let's get to the greatest of all time, the champ, Ric Flair. And on the Boost mobile phone right now, let me welcome Ric Flair to Talk is Jericho. Woo!
Hey, Big Daddy.
Hey, champ, how are you doing?
What's the honky-tonk man think he's doing? Smarting off.
Guy never couldn't crack an egg if he punched it, right? If he stepped on it. Just, he was never...
No, I never heard that story. Jesus. unbelievable. Well, how are you doing, Chris?
Good, man. Yeah, I'm doing good. I really appreciate you doing this. I'm actually more excited to hear about the stories than anybody else listening. I think you got some great, I'm sure you have some great ones.
Oh God, I got so many. It's unreal. We were all there. Steamboat, DiBiase, Taker came, myself, Wendy, who's had to hear these stories forever, and knew Harley, back when he was managing Vader, you know, but, God, they just go on forever. And just being there at the funeral, there were guys that were coming up and asking me about stories that Harley told about us together, if they were true. And every one of them was just the shit he used to do. And, you know, I met him in 72 when I first started. So, well, this is when he was the AWA with, tagged up with Larry Henning. So, I mean, you can imagine those two.
Well, let's just jump right into it. So that's when you first met him, because I know that you considered Harley to be a mentor of yours in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, we're recording now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say this on your podcast.
Okay.
I don't want to worry about qualifying things today, like saying I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm just going to say what I think.
Okay, sure.
So, I mean, you know, you and all you listen to things, and then everybody always goes, I don't mean bad about this. Does that mean I'm not knocking this guy, but you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I say today is open game, okay?
Gotcha.
All right, and I'm ready to talk about anything. After being around Harley Race, you know, before I start telling stories, I got to tell you, I saw him 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And all I could think about, Chris, was about everybody, whoever it was, and it's been a few, that I've let get me down or browbeat me.
Right.
After being with him and being in that era and being, you know, what we call the traveling world champion, me being the last guy, you know, with the Briscoe Race Funk era where we were in Singapore one day and St. Louis the next.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really made me aware of that. And I just thought, God, I let him down. You know what I mean? Here's the deal. So I'm a kid growing up in Minneapolis. Harley is there with AWA. And I have been sent away to private school, and I had come home for Christmas break and whatever it was, and the front page of the Charlotte paper, back then everybody read the paper, it's not like now, There was a front page article about this wrestler named Harley Race. He got stabbed at a bar or a restaurant called the Chestnut Tree in a fight, and how he just went to the hospital with the knife still in him, and they took it out when he got there, right? And then about, oh, maybe 3 months later, he shot out all the windows of a barbecue place called Cal's Barbecue, and I got arrested for shooting out the windows. And I guess that was, he'll tell you, I won't use the language, but that was his retaliation. He went after the guys that stabbed him. But that made the papers, and that's how I met him. And then, you know, you automatically fall in love with I'm 16. He must have been 70. He was 22.
Right.
So I'm 60. Yeah, 22. 6 year difference. And just everything. I mean, and then I, of course, Harley went in and out of the AWA, but there were all these stories about him driving a speedboat up on the beach at Lake Minnetonka, which is the biggest lake in Minneapolis, a very luxurious area, driving a speedboat up on the beach 80 miles. And because he was trying to get Larry Henning to come out of the... Larry was out with Irene and trying to get him to come out and get on the boat with him, so he thought he'd make some spectacular entrance. And as you've heard, everything that Harley did, he had to be better at.
Mm-hmm.
He had to have the fastest car. He had to drink the beer the fastest. He got the arm wrestling, finger lock, especially the finger lock stuff, you know.
What's the finger lock stuff?
Oh, yeah. He loved to lock hands with you and do that thing. You know what I mean? And he'd lose. And then, you know, just everywhere I went with him, I just... the story which got told the other day, the guy said to me, is it true that when you broke in with Harley, you made a trip from Nebraska to Denver, Colorado? And I said, yeah. And he said, he said that he was with Ray Stevens and you, and that Ray Stevens told him to slow down, and he told Ray to shut up, which very few people did, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm driving, like, Ray, shut up. I'm got it, you know, that kind of deal.
Right.
But what they did back then is they would pass around a bottle of Jack with the beer, right? And every time he passed me the bottle in the back, Harley turned the light on to make sure I was drinking. So, and he drove that goddamn, in a snowstorm, he drove, Greg Gagne said, we'll race, right? So Greg's in another car with Rashke and some other guys of notoriety back then. Well, we were at the hotel, checked in for an hour and a half before they got there. He drove through the snowstorm 100 miles an hour and just smoked cigarettes and told stories and drank. He was just crazy. he was, I'll use his voice to the best of my ability. So I was working the territory, which he owned part of, Kansas City, which in Des Moines, Iowa was part of.
Right.
Well, Des Moines is about 180 miles. I think it's right at that from KC. So I called, I said, Harley, he said, you want to ride with me tomorrow? We're wrestling each other. And I said, yeah, is that okay? And he said, I own the territory. It's fine. You know, so he picked me up in his Porsche at 5:30 for a 7 o'clock show. And I said, of course, my question again, are we going to get in trouble? In the trouble with who? I own the territory and you're wrestling me. We were there in 3 hours.
Wow.
180. He drove that Porsche, radar detector in the front, which he was the first guy to ever have a radar detector, probably. Radar detector in the back. I mean, and just the way we went, he just, his 9mm sitting on the dashboard. It just, that's just the way it was.
Right. Well, like you said, it was a different time back then, you know? So,
If you think about it, that's 1983, 4. It seems like a long time ago, but the 80s was a pretty happening area. Harley just didn't, he went nowhere without a gun.
Hmm.
I mean, he put a gun in the back, he always reminded me of the movie Lethal Weapon.
Right.
Who's the famous actor?
Mel Gibson.
Yeah, Mel, that had that 9mm.
Right.
And Harley would always put it in the back of his pants, you know, underneath the sport coat. Wherever he went.
just for protection or in case somebody tried to rip him off?
No, he just carried it. Not for protection. I don't think Harley ever thought about getting beat up, but that's the way it was. Harley's walked down, has walked a guy down with a gun in his face before.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't there. I didn't see it, but I have no problem saying it or believing that he told the guy, shoot me or you're decide right now, because when I get a hold of you, you're not going to have a decision to make. I've seen him do things that put his life in as much danger as that.
You sent me a list of great stories, and one of the stories is that he pulled a gun on Hogan in the dressing room.
Well, no, here's how it goes, okay? This, and I'll use Harley's words, okay?
Okay.
So we're at the Memorial Auditorium, where the Kansas City, it's in Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Kansas City, Missouri, across the river. You've been there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So they didn't have the Kemper Arena yet. They just had that big auditorium in Missouri, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first night that WWE or WWF back then comes to town, I'm wrestling Brody, and Harley's at our building, and he says to me, Ricky, go work something out with Brody. I don't want you going through tonight. Tell him that I said you're going to take a fall. And I went, Harley, I don't want to go tell Brody anything. Please, I'm wrestling him. I don't mind doing the hour. This conversation was ongoing for years with Harley, always telling me that to take a fall on Brody, which has never happened. And we did on a 2-on-3 one time, but because he wanted me to, because he liked me, we did business, but he was always... He always wanted to, let Brody know that he was the boss. They never had it out, but it was a different relationship. So anyway, he's down. You were in an old building before, right, with the stage east side. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. I think we went there for WCW or something. So,
yeah, we were down there, and he said, Ricky, WWE and that, or WWF and that plastic champion Hogan are running across town, which we all knew about, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you work out things with Brody, I've got bigger fish to fry. And he takes his 9mm out of his bag and put in his bag and walked out the door. Well, he drove over there, and guess who met him at the door?
Who?
Randy's dad, oh. Bobby. And the first thing he said, where's Hogan? And Hogan was in the bathroom. Hogan will tell you the story. He walked in there, and Hogan just said, hey, man, I'm just here on behalf of WWE. But he did have a gun. I swear, Chris, I've never seen anybody that could intimidate you more than, when I was his friend, I never felt that because he never talked to me like that. But when he looked at you and said something, you were around him a little bit. You know what I mean? He used to just pie face Vader and say, shut up, fat man. When he was managing him, you know what I mean?
Right.
And Leon's not here, so I'm not making fun of Leon, but Leon would tell you the same thing. Nobody jacked around with Harley. And at two other stories that are famous, and Shawn Michaels tells them great in that, but the best one for me, where I really just saw a guy off guard, was Hunter had just started and come to WCW, right?
Right.
So, and he was a huge wrestling fan. We all know that about Hunter. He's like you and me, grew up loving the business, right?
Yeah.
So, we walk in there at center stage, and you've been there, and Harley's sitting there in his suit, on the edge of the chair, kind of rocking back and forth on the bench, right? And I go, hey, Harley, this is a new guy, Paul Levesque. This is before he became Hunter Hearst Helmsley, right? Mm-hmm. Before Regal. And he goes, how you doing, kid? And this is Hunter. Hello, Mr. Ace. I do this all the time with Hunter. And have you heard this?
No.
Oh, yeah. And Harley goes, take the drag on his cigarette. He goes, who trained you? Killer Kowalski. Drag on his cigarette. He's the shit. What do you say to that?
Right.
I was dying. Hunter might as well have said, okay. He didn't, but he was like, where do you go from there?
Right.
He's the shit. And then the other one is when Larry sent Kurt down when he first started the business.
Mm-hmm.
The word KC was like going to Memphis. The same deal, right? You go there to learn, but that's about it. You don't make any money.
Right.
And Kurt goes, what do you want to do for a finish tonight, Mr. Ace? What's your finish, kid? And he pulls on the cigarette. And Kurt goes, drop kick off the top rope. And I only take the drag. I'll move. Hey, how about this one? So he says to me, I'm flying to Honolulu and I notice this dark haired chick, I'll use chick as another word to use, is getting a lot of attention. So I said to the stew, who's the brunette that everybody's talking to? And she goes, well, it's Priscilla Presley, Mr. Race. Huh. We landed, and there was a big banner waiting at the gate. I think the stupid, I'll use the word bitch, thought there was a landing party for her. When they opened the door, there was a 50-foot banner that said, welcome, seven-time world champion, Harley Race. He said, I had a party. I'll be polite. I had a party with that bitch until she fell asleep. This is Priscilla Presley. I can't use the word he was using. He had a very graphic word for women.
I'm sure.
I kept her up all night long.
Oh, man.
50-foot banner. It opened the door and it read, welcome, seven-time world heavyweight champion, Harley Race. Swear to God, I wish I could say, I mean, I've got so many Billy Bobs in Fort Worth, right?
Right.
So, you know, the one thing about Harley, he always, it's like, you know, you've been around about, he didn't get excited about nothing.
No,
nothing,
very quiet, yeah.
I mean, he just went at his own pace in the ring. He did his thing, you know, like, the first time I ever tied up with him, before I tell Billy Bobs, the first time I ever tied up with him, right?
Right.
Grab a headlock, kid. One tackle, drop down, leapfrog, hip lock, slam, grab me in a headlock again. Come off low, daddy. Meaning, because if you get a leapfrog, you come off low, right? That's the way it was.
Yeah.
Don't move. And he climbed the rope for the flying headbutt and all that. So, Billy Bob's, you know, I want to go in as 1,000 women, right? Having fun, country western, girls in their jeans. You know, you've seen me, right? The whole deal.
Right.
And all he wants to do is go over to the pool table and grab a cue and knock everybody's quarter off the table. And then take a drag out of a cigarette and say, I got the winner. There's 20 people look at him with their quarter on the ground, you know?
Right.
They got in a hell of a fight that one night. I wasn't there. With me, it never happened. But David Manning, they got into a major fight where the cops had to come and everything. Because, you know, like 20 guys against him and David Manning. But he lived it, you know? Elk Owen, Don Owen's partner or brother out in the Portland territory.
Uh-huh.
They'd have Mark challenge Harley when he come to the ring.
So how do you mean? Like just like an old school?
Elton would say, well, there's a guy here that thinks he can beat you. And Harley'd say, let's start the show a little early. and get rid of him. And then, in other words, we're not going to waste drinking time after the show. Let's start the show.
Do it beforehand. Right.
Yeah. And, of course, the guy getting ring, Harley beat the shit out of him. The one time, I can't remember who it was. I was going to call David Crockett and ask him before I spoke with you, but if a guy was ever causing a problem in a territory that thought he was tough, the promoters flew Harley in.
To kind of teach him a lesson?
Yep. On TV. They bring him a TV and put him in the ring with Harley.
Didn't you take him to Japan with you one time? I think you told me the story.
No, I didn't take him. The NWA sent him to protect me.
Yeah, let's hear that story.
Here's the story. Bob Geigel calls me and he goes, hey, Rick, I got some good news and bad news. And I go, what? He said, well, I got that Japan thing next week. He said, Bob wants to switch the title, which I was looking forward to that because Briscoe and Harley and those guys, when Bob switched the title, which they both did with them, they got $25,000 apiece for doing it, right?
Oh, right.
So I was looking, you know, and Harley told me, said, well, Harley, want to switch your title while you're champion, and it's a $25,000 payday. Otherwise, back in our day, it was, we'd go over there for a week, and we got $3,000 for single matches apiece, and $2,500 for a tag match, right?
Mm, right.
So if I went 4 days, I'd have 3-hour Broadways and then one tag match, but I'd come back with, you know, like $12,000. That's a lot of money for a week. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And how much fun. So Geigel said, so they want to switch the title and we don't want to do it. So we're going to, and you're wrestling Theruda, you know, who used to just stretch me 50 feet long. I mean, literally, if you thought that the Brock German, John Cena at SummerSlam a couple years ago,
right?
If Theruda didn't give me 20 Germans, he didn't give me one.
Wow.
Exactly. I couldn't do anything about it. You know what I mean? I just went with it and hope I didn't get my neck broken, you know?
Right.
So, Geigel goes, So we're gonna send Harley with you to make sure they don't. How embarrassing is that? So Harley, I met him in Chicago. We got in the plane and never thought it would come to this. Who the do they think they are? Baba says boo, and I'll slap the shit out of him. And Saruta will probably be afraid to come to the ring. Then while I'm wrestling Saruta, he's there ringside. And you remember Lord El, what was the guy? Lord Blears was the referee.
Yeah.
And how did he go? There's cold beer waiting on us. Let's get this over with. So, was it? Threw it into shit to me that night. He just said we had a regular match.
Well, he was terrified.
Another time, I was there and Holly was wrestling Saruta, and Holly was the champion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess Saruta, I didn't ask him to suplex him one part of the match, and you know, you saw Harley work his style. He totally worked his style. He didn't change. You worked the way Harley wanted you to. You didn't, you know, you didn't push him around, right?
Right.
So, you know, you being in the Budokan, how the dressing rooms are, right?
Yep.
Baby faces are about 50 feet down or 50 yards down. So he comes in and he goes, I've had it with that rookie. Mm. He looks at, he lights up a cigarette and says, come here, Rick, here, and watch this. So I go, oh, God, here we go. So I walked down there, and he walked in, and Baba's sitting there, as he did for years. You know, like 5 feet of his frame is above the, right, from his sitting, right?
Right.
Smoking that Roy Tan cigar. And he walked in and said, where is Saruta? And Jumbo was down, like, you know, 20 feet down, just coming out of the shower with a towel around his back, just sat down. He walked through it. He said, did I call that last suplex? And threw it and didn't say nothing to him. And Harley smacked the shit out of him.
Oh, wow.
I mean, open-handed, knocked him off the goddamn chair. And threw it with a big kid.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, and he goes, don't ever do anything in that ring without asking me first. Understood? Wow.
And like you said, Saruta is a big kid, aka 6'5", 6'4". Or, you know,
well, he won a bronze medal.
Yeah, won a bronze medal. And also, too, you're in Japan where there's a modicum of respect there, but Harley doesn't give a shit, right?
Oh, unbelievable. I think he's the most respected wrestler I've ever seen over there. I mean, they love Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
They loved him. Really, Terry had a tremendous run. Terry. But they loved Terry, the character, and the fact he was a, you know, phenomenal worker. But with Harley, it was just the respect with the young boys, and that was, I mean, Inoki, all those guys, nobody said boo.
Hmm. How did you like working with Harley?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was so easy. His pace, I mean, and there was no change in his pace. And every trip with him was an adventure. We'd laugh and he'd drink and, the thing too, you know, he was in that car wreck that killed his wife, his first wife when he was 19, where he almost lost his leg. And right. They put that 19-inch, or I'm sorry, that 12-inch rod in his left forearm.
Hmm.
You know about that, right?
Well, I didn't know he had the rod. I know he had the car crash, though.
Yeah. It was from his wrist to his elbow, a metal plate. But it made his arm like RoboCop. And he, you know, he'd smoke with a cigarette with his right hand, and be talking to a guy in his left hand just sitting there, and most people obviously anticipating people being right-handed if there's going to be a fight.
Mm.
And I have seen him just completely, I mean, make a guy, make his face contort.
Mm.
Hit him so hard. I mean, out, knocked him out cold.
Because he was very strong.
Strong. You saw that picture of him slamming Andre. Yeah, there he is. Who do they think they are? And why did Hogan was the first one to slam Andre? So, you know, when I was there one night when he slammed and suplexed Andre, vertical suplex, I actually think that Harley invented the vertical suplex. He got it from Japan because nobody was doing it to Harley. I never saw it ever in Minneapolis until I saw Harley. But in Greensboro, he slammed and suplexed Andre. And so even me, I said to him, because I know them both real well, but I just assumed, I said, did you ask Andre before he did that? You're like I'm a mark, right?
Right.
And he goes, ask him what? And I said, but before you did the slam and the suplex, I called it in the ring like I always do. Why would I ask him? Swear to God. I called it in the ring. Why would I ask Andre if I could slam him?
but once again, too, Rick, you're talking about Andre the Giant. If he didn't want to go up, he probably wouldn't have gone up. But it's Harley Race that he's in there with. He's probably scared of Harley Race, too.
I can guarantee it. The thing about Harley Race is I think people, once the word got out, it win, lose, or draw, you were going to lose a body part. Whether it be an eye, your nose, the ear, bite off your finger, there was no way to win. I mean, you might have got a friend, you might have punched him a few times, but you know about his head. His head was like a cement block. I mean, you've seen him. You've heard the stories about him headbutting guys, just killing him with that headbutt. Jesus, smashing their noses. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen him do that in a bar.
When my dad was playing in Oklahoma City in, I think, 65 or 66 with the Oklahoma team, the hockey team, he got in a skirmish with Harley Race in a bar. Not an actual fight because it got broken up beforehand. And I was like, Dad, you have no idea. Like, you're tough as nails, but Harley Race is like one of the toughest men of all time. You're lucky that that fight got broken up.
Well, here's the thing. But see, I'm going to use you as an example, and I'm going to refer to you as Jericho, okay?
Okay.
So, like, Chris, you're known as the guy that has guts. You're not afraid of anybody, okay?
Right.
And I say to people, well, his dad played in the NHL. I mean, you know, his dad played when Probert and Gordie Howe and those guys were skating around.
Mm-hmm.
They're tough now. But they're not out there surviving like guys like that had to.
Right.
I mean, those guys, they fought to get paid.
To stay on the team, too, exactly. If not, you'd go to the minor leagues. You'd never see the NHL again.
Yeah, I just, with Bobby Hull, will tell you, Gordie Howe would stick his stick right in your mouth, in your eye. I mean, he wasn't like a guy with a fist that much. But, I'm sure your dad wasn't at all afraid of Harley, you know, but. God only knows if he got on him, he probably lose a finger. He probably wasn't used to biting your eye out.
Did you see Harley get in some barroom fights?
No, I've just seen him knock people out. It was over in 10 seconds. I missed the big one that Manning was at. David Manning could tell you. He was at the one that where all the cops came. But Harley was. Probably there were about five of them out cold before the cops got Harley off them.
Jeez.
At Billy Bob's. Yeah, he was. The guys kept coming and Harley kept saying, you know what I mean? They made the mistake of not jumping on him one at a time. It's like, you know, they're sending the toughest one and the next one. Manning said it was getting bad because he'd get against the wall. It'd be like Haku, you know what I mean?
Right.
And you've heard stories about Haku.
I've seen them.
It's hard to move them off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a caged animal.
Harley's, it was like brass knucks. I mean, with 260 pounds behind it.
Let's talk about Starrcade 83 with the Flair for the Gold. That might be one of your most famous matches you had with Harley, and one of the most famous angles that you've ever had when you're the champ.
Well, for sure, it was Dusty's creation, but Harley made it happen. And as legend has it, you know, he had an opportunity. He was presented with an opportunity to not show up. Do you know about that?
No.
Yeah, you know, without elaborating, he was presented with an opportunity to not show up, which would have killed the NWA, would have killed Crockett.
I know you can't say, but I can. I have heard this. Vince offered to pay him not to show up for the match. He wanted him to come in to WWE and basically leave you guys hanging.
You've heard it then.
Yeah, I've heard it. Yeah, it's kind of it's online. It's on the internet and stuff. So it's not a secret.
I know. Right. Well, that's the truth. Yeah, it was a snowstorm, and we were all sitting there, pins and needles. And he came in, and he'd been in New York the night before.
Wow.
And this, again, is coming from him, but I certainly wouldn't call him a liar. And I guess he just made up his mind, and the way he presented it to me, which is something I'll never forget, is he got there at 9 o'clock, but, man, we had, you know, Crockett had closed circuit of it. Greensboro had been sold out for months. It was huge. And it was really up in the map. He said, "I'd never let you down, Ricky. You should have known that. We didn't have cell phones back then, right? So, but he walked in the door and he said, "I'm here, Crockett, but we need to talk." So, I think there was a reimbursement process.
But once again, that's how it was, because, you know, we know the
he wouldn't do it. You know, I cannot say that for everybody.
Right.
He wouldn't betray me, and he wouldn't let the NWA down. And, man, can you imagine the history of our business if he didn't show up?
Sure. That's right.
No, it's that big, Chris. I mean, Crockett would have been, NWA would have been over. The whole thing would have been dead. And all Harley would have done was lose that $25,000 deposit. What are you going to do, beat him up? I don't think so.
Well, right.
He would have been like a god in New York. I mean, they'd have taken whoever, whether it's Bob Backlund or Pedro, whoever was the champion, then they would have made Harley the champion, because, you know, they had Bob there pretty much to guard it. And Vince Sr., you know, trusted him, but I'm sure that Harley could have been trusted, and nobody would have messed with Harley either, including Bob. So
it's so crazy that's how it was, because I know Sheik had the opportunity. I think Vern tried to get Sheik to, like, break Hogan's leg or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the way things used to be, of just trying to steal the guys away from these matches.
Here's the thing about Kaz. You know, I started with Kazro.
Right.
Kazro is a really tough amateur wrestler, but he doesn't have it in his heart to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Harley would take a baseball bat and break your leg over a wooden chair. I mean, if push came to shove, but he was the gentlest guy in the world. But if you pushed him, I never had a chance to meet his mother and father. I actually met his sisters for the first time. But I can only imagine, he was just raised. I mean, he was driving Happy Farmer Humphrey around at the age of 13, wrestling in carnivals. But actually, he'd say to me, I used to have to wipe the fat bastard's ass, change his diaper.
What?
Oh, yeah, that's how he started, driving Happy Farmer Humphrey around.
Wow.
He was a 600-pound haystack Calhoun.
Wow.
So, yeah, he would say to me, so when I look at this belt, I know that I've worked hard and come from nowhere to earn it. Because that belt, the competition between him and Jack and Terry and the Funks was big back then, boy.
Oh, sure it was.
Yeah, when Jack dropped it to, when Jack got said, I'm done with it, and they called Eddie brought Terry in. They brought Terry in instead of Harley, and it was like a swerve. A political swerve, because the NWA was at one time, there were 9 people on the board, but between Eddie and the Funks and Geigel and Fritz, and I mean, Barnett was part of it, but he, Barnett wasn't an assertive guy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they brought Terry in instead of Harley when Harley was supposed to get it. So I've just heard, you know, parts of that story. But there was always a rivalry with those guys.
Well, I mean, there's also the famous story, too, where Dory was going to drop it to Harley, and then he had the truck accident at the farm and couldn't be there. That was always the one.
Yeah, that's another one, too, right?
Right.
Was he supposed to drop it to Harley then? And who did he drop it to?
I'm just looking to see. I'll just go online and check it out. But
I do remember that story. Yeah.
But that's what we're saying. Just how things were back then. Where, you know, like you mentioned, it was supposed to try and sign this guy away, or there's, you know, reasons to not drop the strap.
When I won, they were so mad when they put the title on me that they basically shut every territory down. Dusty left Florida. He would work with me. I went out and worked with guys you never heard of with JJ Booking. They gave me no one to work with anywhere except for Portland and my own territory when I went back there. But that was once every 8 weeks.
And why were they so mad?
Because they didn't want Crockett to have any power, and they didn't think that I was going to be a world champion. But Pat O'Connor said I was too small. I mean, I heard it all. I was the same size as Rogers, but it basically boiled down to the fact that I wasn't as good as I thought I was, and I found out real fast because I was wrestling guys like Wahoo and Steamboat and, you know, any number of guys from Mid-Atlantic that were really good performers. You find out how good you are when you go wrestle a guy that can't work.
Right.
And basically, a lot of territories had a ton of guys that were just average performers. And I wasn't over enough, number one. Number two, I wasn't skilled enough to, like, I mean, I could have really good matches with guys that could work. But, you know, an hour is the difference between going 15 and 20 minutes and then trying to go an hour with a guy and make sure you come back the next week and you're sold out again. You know what I mean? That's a lot of responsibility with that belt. Of course you get blamed. Everybody knows, or they think, which isn't the case, that you're getting paid 10%. And usually business is better, but, you know, it needs to be sold out. But there were only two promoters that paid 10%, Paul Bosch and Don Owen. Even Jimmy Crockett didn't pay me 10% of the gate.
Wow, really?
No, it changed a lot. And then, of course, what really changed the face of the NWA was the Von Erichs coming along, because Fritz had groomed Kerry forever, and that deal was doomed because of Kerry's social habits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a wonderful kid that he was in that. When I dropped it to him, they had me take it back, you know, in Japan, that nobody even knew. They called me while I was there. I was actually there with Harley, and they said, we need to flip it back. I think Kerry missed one of his first dates. I left right from that show that day, flew to Frisco, and then Harley and I went on a world tour we went to Hong Kong, Singapore, and Tokyo, which is one of the greatest trips I've ever had in my life. 12 days with him. So you can only imagine. That's back when they had the first class cabin upstairs on the 747s, and
yeah,
Harley could smoke and tell stories, and that was fantastic. Hey, I'm actually going to speak at Destroyers at the memorial ceremony for Destroyer Dick Beyer,
right,
in November in Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
Bring me over for it.
Well, that's another guy that was super highly respected. Was Dick?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize that he almost became the athletic director at Syracuse.
Well, he also worked with Reed quite a bit, too.
With my son, Reed. He took Reed
to Japan.
We went together on that homestay.
Right.
On that, yeah, it was the Japan All-Nationals. And Reed was supposed to wrestle at, I can't remember, but he gained 15 pounds. I took him first class, and he gained. So he wrestled heavyweight. He's still 3,000 kids. He got second. He got a silver medal.
That's great. So, yeah, with Dick as the coach.
We spent One of the greatest trips of our, you know, father son life. We spent 10 days together in Tokyo, and I just, you know, took him to all the yakitori and Korean barbecue places, and
that's great. Well, we went to Japan together. We had a good time.
Yeah, I know. I should have gone out with you instead of being true to that wit. I'm in the hotel drinking in the bar. You're up in Roppongi raising hell with Jessica, and I'm trying to be a good guy. What the hell? Okay, every time I straighten myself out, the shit doesn't work for me.
See, that's the problem. You just got to keep being you. You're like Keith Richards, man.
If you, I know. Well, I got Wendy this time. I got a keeper. Thank God.
You're damn right you do.
Hey, listen. She's here with me, and she's holding out for the big bucks with Netflix special. Living with Ric Flair. for the past 7 years, him in rehab, checking him out, watching him get drunk again, watching him almost die and then die again.
Nobody believes the stories.
Give me entitled. I can't get rid of the old bastard.
As we wind down, there's just a couple last things, but I'm just reading right here. It was actually Dory was supposed to drop it to Jack, got in the car crash, and then Harley stepped in and agreed to be the transitional champion so that Dory wouldn't have to lose to Briscoe.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that was it. Yeah, I'll tell you a funny one that I've never heard the outcome of. But, you know, all the guys played cards in Japan, right?
Right.
And so the Briscoes were good friends with Luke Graham, the brother. Remember Luke?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was cheating at cards, and Harley beat him up. And so the Briscoes waited for Harley at the hotel and jumped on him on the elevator and closed the door. And to this day, I can't get Jerry Briscoe to give me the outcome. Of course, according to Harley, the Briscoes found out why I've got the belt. I gotta ask Jerry the next time. Oh yeah, they were those guys back then, man. It was old Jack. Jack, I'm sure could take Dory down, could take Harley down, but to what avail? I don't know what he'd get out of that.
Well, and that's the thing, because like you were saying, everybody back then was a legit shooter until you came along, and you were more of just a pure worker and entertainer.
I was a legit entertainer. Let's just get right down to it.
Yeah.
Then wrestled in high school and won the intramurals at Minnesota. That's it.
It's funny, though. I'm just reading about Flair for the Gold. That's when Fifi the Maid was involved.
I know.
There you go.
Are you kidding?
I had no idea.
Dusty created the character, and Rick owned it.
Hey, will you go on record as saying that I created the man?
Well, of course you created the man. To beat the man, you got to beat the man.
And it's trademark. I need to hear that.
Yes, it's trademark, so no one should be using it, male or female.
Thank you so much. We'll find out shortly. I'll keep you posted on that.
When you were doing matches with Harley, would he call the finishes in the ring as well, or would you know? Because I remember
Well, usually, believe it or not, with the exception of a few times, it was always an hour.
Hmm.
Yeah, because even when I worked for Crockett, they didn't want to beat me, you know? So if I'm working for Crockett, the hour, you know, once you get used to it with a guy like Harley, you know, it's kind of like we're laughing about Honky Tonk, that story which I never heard.
Well, tell the story.
I just sent it to you about the Dynamite Kid.
Yeah, something along the lines where Harley had just had stomach surgery, and then...
Yeah, and apparently Honky said, I guess he lost his guts, and I didn't know this story, but I read it, and then Dynamite Kid slapped the shit out of him, and, you're reading it right there, it said, you know, he was on the floor crying, so, right. But, you know, I mean, there are just some guys you don't even make jokes about.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be in bad taste, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And, do you know that in 1987, the reason I remember this so vividly, I just moved into a new home and I was working out. I had built a gym adjacent to the house, a separate building. And I was working out, and I got the phone call. It was 87. That Harley had driven his Porsche into a concrete beam divider in the daytime, 90 miles an hour, you know, basically trying to kill himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What happened, he was in a boat wreck. And I don't want to be misquoted here or say the wrong thing. You might want to look this up. But he was driving his boat, you know, 100 miles an hour, not really, but fast across the lake at night. And there was a big cabin cruiser that was anchored without an anchor light. Having owned boats, it's a state law that you have to have a running light at night, or you have to have anchor lights to show where you are, right? Well, they didn't have a light on Harley, hit it. And I think someone was either really severely injured or was killed.
Mm.
And so Harley thought he was going to jail. But he hit that beam going 90 miles an hour in a 911, which is a rear engine Porsche, and lived.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, even at the end, Chris, he was just so tough. He just wouldn't give. When I saw him, I just said, you know, he could barely talk. And I just said, are you hurt? And he squeezed my hand and I said, where? And he went, everywhere.
Mm.
So he's in a better place.
Last couple of things. What did you think when he went to, when he finally did go work for Vince in 87 or 88 or whatever it was?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, and this is interesting, and you'll like this as a historian, a guy who follows our business. After you've been the NWA champion, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do, right?
Right.
You've been all around the world. You put everybody over, right? And so where I was lucky, because I was part of the Crockett deal, and the evolution of the business was changing, I always had a home and I had a place to go, right? Mm-hmm. For guys like Jack, I mean, Jack just quit, went home for 2 years. Then he finally went up because Jerry and him went up to be the Briscoe brothers. They came to Carolina. But his days of being a world champion were over. He just having fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they both did well on that sale of the Georgia Championship Wrestling thing when they sold out to Vince. But really, in the old days, where did the guy go? So when Harley went up there, I was happy for him. And I think that, you know, Vince saw something in Harley, you know, not only the fact he was so respected by the guys, but, and it gave Harley a nice run, as did the thing at WCW. But it's a funny thing, like the traveling world champion, where do you go after?
Right.
After you've been around the world. And basically, you've either put everybody over or you haven't beaten anybody. Does that make sense?
Sure it does.
Yeah. It's the most prestigious title in the world, and people look back at it and say that, but the traveling world champion just did, I figured out with Wendy yesterday that, let's say I was traveling for 38 years on a regular business, so I'm close to 12 million miles.
Oh my gosh. And it makes, yeah, once again, because you guys are traveling 330 days a year or whatever it was too.
Well, keep in mind that I have cashed in the mileage, but I've got 4.3 million on Delta alone.
Jeez.
And I used to fly primarily northwest to Japan, which I've been to 65 times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, then Eastern, the U.S. Air, American. That's a lot of flying. That's a lot of drinking, Chris.
We've been there and back. And just to clarify, I looked it up. When Harley had the boat accident, he had a broken nose. He almost bit his tongue in half, and he still rescued two people out of the river by hanging on to a large piece of debris. So nobody died, but people got hurt, and then he had to pay $250,000 in restitution to the victims.
Yeah, but he saved some lives, right?
He did. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's unreal. The guy was unreal, but he thought he was going to do jail time.
Wow.
You know, I'm sure you can pull up the car wreck. And while he was in the hospital, his wife served divorce papers to him.
Yeah. I mean, that is a tough, old school brother right there.
There's a guy that you want to be in a foxhole with.
Yeah.
You just felt, when you're with Harley Race, you felt invincible.
And like you said, you were the last kind of those traveling world champions. And it's such a, not a lost art, but I don't think people quite understand just how much you guys went through to do that.
No, I don't think you ever will. You know, I am extremely lucky to have ended up, you know, not to mention, which, you know, it's kind of like, I'll be at odds with my oldest son forever because they resent the fact that I wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he takes it personally, which is, you know, I can't resolve that issue for him. But if I don't think he's ever taken time to look at what we did, you know,
right.
Which is, unless you've lived it or been such a part of it like you are, or grew up with a dad that was, your dad had to travel like hell.
Yeah, sure. The difference was in hockey, you know, there's an off season, and of course, as we know, in wrestling, there isn't, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to say. I made a joke the other day. They had Austin on First Take, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about the most electrifying stars in our business, right? Or in sports entertainment. And they were talking Tiger Woods and LeBron and Michael Jordan. And so I tweeted out to them. I said, guys, you just had the most electrifying guy in sports, you know, which...
Right.
And like, we were in Tampa, you were gone, I was going to see you while we were there. To this day, when I say that, because Tiger Woods isn't doing it 330 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And either is Michael or either is LeBron or anybody else. And the other night, like, Wendy had never seen Steve come out live to the music, right? Mm-hmm. First comes me, you know, I got my reaction to movies, right? Here comes Hulk, his hometown, he got a huge pop. But when they play Austin's music and he walks down to the ring, there's never been anything like it except maybe The Rock. Would you agree?
Agreed. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And you got, and those guys, like you, I mean, like we all did, that's 340 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if Tiger did that, they wouldn't give a shit.
That's right. Exactly.
340 days a year. Does that make sense?
And it's 340 days of having to, you know, to be under par every night. You know, that's another thing. You got to be good and have good matches and have good performances as well.
Very interesting point. And you've got to perform.
Yep.
And it's 20,000 one night, 10,000 the next night, or you guys were doing it in front of 60 and 70,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'll never forget my first day when I first came at 2001. I was watching, and it was you. You tell me who the components were. It was you, Angle, Rock, and Austin. And you guys were in a tag match. And I remember I told you afterwards, I said, holy shit.
Yeah.
What a match. Do you remember me telling you that?
I do remember. Me and Kurt versus Steve and Rock. I mean, just look at those names.
I mean, the pace and the match. I mean, and I thought to myself, and I'm wondering why in the hell WCW went out of business.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
right.
I didn't get a chance to watch it all the time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I can remember walking up to you and Angle, probably all four of you. But, you know, I talked to you probably more than I did anybody. It was much of anybody up there.
Right.
Because you always drank. Wendy, I can always cut. It's not just me. Jericho was in the bar every night, too. Okay.
They called me the new Flair for a while.
I heard on the cruise that you were the Flair for how long was your cruise last time?
They told me
you were full-fledged Flair alcoholic status.
And I did 17 shows too.
Yeah, you and your wife.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we're still married.
They said she wasn't far behind you. So
exactly.
I'm breaking myself in right now. I'm actually having little minimal shots of vodka. In cranberry and soda, preparing for the Jericho cruise. What's the theme of the show?
What's the theme of it?
Yeah, of your cruise.
There's a lot of it's the Rock and Wrestling Razor. So there'll be.
But it's the Chris Jericho.
It's rocking. The Chris Jericho cruise. That's right, Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Razor. That's it. Exactly.
Okay. Well, listen, try to keep somebody from wearing Y2J on the show, okay?
I'll try. Last question for you, Rick. Of all the matches you had with Harley, does one of them stand out as your favorite?
Well, ironically, it would not be the one in Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that was a very good match.
Gotcha.
I mean, it was thunderous and all that, but it was we had Kaniski for a referee, I think, and it was just, it was awkward. When you got a special referee that's trying to be in the middle of everything,
right?
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So, and I think I was so nervous, you know, in a way, because I hardly got there late. And I'd have to say that a number of matches I had with them were better than that. But the moment makes it great. Does that make sense?
Sure it does, yeah.
But you've been ruined with a special referee. I mean, they had me referee a match one time and with Austin and somebody, and Vince called me and I said, "You're the worst referee I've ever seen in my life." And I said, "Well, you know, that's the first match I've ever refereed, and hopefully it's the last." You know, it's kind of like I wrestled the Warrior one time in your hometown, Winnipeg, right?
Yeah.
And I came back to the curtain, and Pat was there, right? And he goes, "That is the worst match I've ever seen in my life for the championship." And I said, "Pat, you don't have to tell me I was in it, you stupid knuckle bitch." Good Lord. And every match I have with him is the shit. No, Pat looks at me like it was something I don't know about, right? I was in it. Jesus Christ.
I got a quick little trivia. I was in the very last match that Gene Kaniski ever had. Six-man tag, me and Lance Storm and Gene Kaniski against three heels in Winnipeg.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'll give you some more trivia. I had, when I first won the title, I had to wrestle Kaniski for an hour in St. Louis.
Wow.
He gave me the giant swing in that old ring and threw me, you know, across. You've ever seen it, right?
Yeah.
You've heard about it for sure. And he ran across the ring. First of all, he's got me, I've never been in a giant swing. He got me waist high, throws me across the ring, and runs at me and screaming, "Leg scissors, you dumb son of a bitch." Now, I'm the champion, right? I commanded so much respect. "Leg scissors, you dumb son of a bitch."
Oh, man.
And here's another bit. My dad delivered Kelly Kaniski.
Oh, really?
In Minneapolis. Gene was there, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, man. Well, Rick, yeah. It's always a blast talking with you, man. And like I said,
thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Harley and just a legendary figure. And you're right there behind him, my friend.
Well, thank you. I wish I could tell you that I carried the torch the way he did, but he certainly gave me the opportunity, and I so much respect. It was just great. And he's in a better place, Chris. And, you know, I'm happy for you and your success and your new career. And, hey, you're going to be right there. I'm 20 years older than you. You got a lot left in you. And, hey, make the most of it and enjoy every minute of it with your family.
Thank you very much, champ. I'll talk to you soon, and we'll have some shots on the cruise for sure.
Okay, man. Well, for sure. I'll see you before then.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Rick. Woo! See you later, Wendy.
Bye.
All right, you never know where Ric Flair might pop up next, but you'll definitely see him if you're coming on Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2. We all set sail on January 20th. There's less than 20 cabins left available at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And we are loaded down with talent. Ric Flair is the guest of honor. There's going to be some great stuff. We're going to do a Ric Flair cosplay contest judged by Ric Flair. We're going to do a Talk as Jericho with Ric Flair. A lot more stories that Rick's going to tell you. Gabriel Iglesias has been added. Fluffy's going to be there. He just played in front of 20,000 people at a fair in New York somewhere, and he's going to be on the Jericho Cruise as the host. AEW is going to be there as well. So much stuff going on with us as we start our weekly TVs October 2nd in Washington, D.C. That's live on the TNT network every Wednesday night, 8 to 10. We're doing Boston, Philly. We're getting ready to announce the tickets, on sale tickets today, actually, for Charleston, West Virginia, and Pittsburgh. Stay tuned for all the exciting AEW action, all the AEW news, and, of course, all the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea news for you. What more can I tell you? I mean, SCU just announced Chris Daniels, Frank Kazarian, Scorpio Sky, the Hall of Famers. AEW is going to be there. Beyond the Darkness telling ghost stories. Fozzy's playing. We got our new song comes out today as well on The Rock of Jericho on Sirius XM Octane at 6 p.m. If you have that, go check out the new song. It's called Nowhere to Run. We'll actually play it here next week
on Talk Is Jericho. And come see us tomorrow night with Nickelback in Atlantic City. So lots of great stuff going on. Kick-Ax, Jerry James Nichols, Dave Spivak Project. Lots of bands coming. I've been telling you about it so many times. Just go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your tickets now. Don't get left behind. And you're getting close to it. Like I said, less than 20 cabins left. So we'll be sold out probably in the next couple of weeks. ChrisJerichoCruise.com and FozzyRock.com for all information about the Unleashed in the West tour that starts September 5th in Denver. Goes all the way to September 28th in Atlanta, Georgia, including the huge gig in Los Angeles at the Bank of California Stadium with Iron Maiden. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and VIP information. We have a great time at VIP. We meet you guys, we hang out, we sign some stuff, we tell some stories, ask some questions, and the coup de grace, we play a five-song mini set just for you, a private Fozzy concert just for you. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information. All right, coming up on Friday, the amazing Kreskin is going to read your mind. Yes, the famous Kreskin, who was one of Johnny Carson's favorite guests. He did the Carson Show almost 100 times. Over the years, so he's got some great stories, old school Hollywood, new school Hollywood, and he reads my mind. It's actually pretty funny, very crazy. So amazing Kreskin will be here on Friday, and I hope you have an amazing week. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big dear boy. Woo! Woo!